KBOO Portland.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from People's Food Co-op, a community-owned natural foods cooperative featuring farm-direct organic produce from more than 30 local farms, bulk foods, and a farmer's market every Wednesday year-round. Located at Southeast Tibbetts Street and 21st Avenue in Portland for almost 50 years. Online at peoples.coop.
Good evening, and welcome to Transpositive PDX on KBOO FM here out of Portland, Oregon. My name is Jean Bryant. I use she and her pronouns, and co-hosting with me tonight is...
Hi, I'm Emma Lugo, and I use she and her pronouns.
Tonight, we have as our special guest, Sheila Mangert. Sheila is the author of multiple books, but this evening, she's going to present for us excerpts from her book, Transsexualism and Its Discontents, a political profile. With that, welcome, Sheila. Please introduce yourself, your pronouns, should you choose.
Oh, hi. Pronouns are she and hers are just fine. And I'm delighted to be with you both tonight to have a chat about my book that I wrote several years ago and to describe it and to do some readings from it.
Excellent. Yeah, Sheila joined us for a panel discussion a couple of weeks ago for International Women's Day. And that was such a fascinating discussion. We really wanted to get her back to be able to expand on some of the work that she has done. So it's going to be exclusively with Sheila this evening. Sheila, tell us about Transsexualism and Its Discontents. Describe the book for us. What did you hope to accomplish with it? What was the project about? When did you write it, etc.?
Okay, I wrote the book several years ago when the word transsexual was more often used in the literature than the word transgender, which has now become more of the standard term for our community. But when I wrote the book, I wanted it to be a book that drew from our history and drew from my own experience, which was that I was locked into a time capsule that dealt with this issue prior to many of the things that we now have today and take for granted. This was the stagecoach days of being a transgender person. There was no internet. There was very little in the way of community. We were still listed in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders as having a mental illness, which we now no longer have per se. The way it is expressed now is it's called gender dysphoria, not gender identity disorder. And in the early days, having a groundwork, having some status that we could bring forward before the world to have them say this isn't just all in your mind, required some sort of a clinical diagnosis. And since the whole essence of dealing with anything medically is to first of all diagnose it and then treat it, there was always a little fear that if we give up that status, if we are no longer a disorder, then is this, does our very existence evaporate? Do we even have an existence after that? And so it was a mixed blessing. We didn't like the idea of being stigmatized by having a mental disorder, but on the other hand, if we gave up that status, we could also lose the problem of having, what if now no one will treat us? What if we don't get surgeries? What if we don't get hormones? If there's nothing to treat, then how can you treat it?
Arguably, Sheila, that's basically still the set of circumstances today. So are you describing like the 1990s, early 2000s? Is that where you are? Contextually?
I'm speaking primarily, well, of course, I talk about my whole life without revealing my age, of course, you know, but of course, I would say that the period of most intense involvement in the book was the 1980s. So
okay.
I write out of the kind of the new wave experience of the 1980s.
Okay, thanks. That sets the time frame context for the listeners.
I'm trying very coyly to sound venerable, but without necessarily revealing my age. It's a delicate act to do.
It's radio. We at least nobody can see us.
there we go. Okay, so now the second part I knew I wanted to write the book, but I had to have a title. I wanted something catchy, and yet I wanted something that played into and had some sort of roots in the literature that already existed. And I came up with the title of "And Its Discontents." And that was just edgy enough to kind of catch the reader's eye. And what I wanted to do, if I could put it this way, is I wanted to be able to complain and be a little bit grouchy about certain things, and at the same time have a license to kvetch about something, because it was right there in the title. And then I had another little thing. It's very common in books nowadays to have a subtitle that's somewhat descriptive of content. And I wanted to have the idea that it's a political profile. So why political? By political, I doesn't mean Democrat or Republican in the strict sense. Political is the struggle for existence. It's the struggle to stand out in the world and have ground on which to stand. That's how I mean political. And this is what we see with indigenous communities, where they're trying to be recognized in their culture, in their language, for who they are. This is what we see in feminism per se. We see people saying, don't ignore us. The whole struggle right now over pronoun usage is to say, recognize us as we desire to be perceived, address us in a manner that doesn't put us on the rack and make us constantly reminded of our prior status. So in my mind, everything involving our existence has a political aspect, therefore the subtitle, A Transgender Political Profile. Now, to explain the methodology, I could give us our first little reading for tonight, because what I wanted to do, since I was writing a very unusual kind of book, I wanted to have a brief note on method, so I actually put this in the book. So this is reading now from the text of the book. A book begins with its cover art. The cover of this book is meant to be somewhat seductive and iconic, as its subject is as well. By being edgy and visually inviting, I hope to invite and imply that the subject of transsexualism will be treated here as one where dream and disillusion may meet, where promise and betrayal cross each other at an ill-defined border. I believe that the prospect of dread is a part of most invitations, and that the degree of promises made often measures the magnitude of disillusion whenever we encounter the dilemmas posed by human life. Comedy in literature often portrays undeserved reprieve more often than the arrival at our just deserts, while tragedy records how even our efforts to achieve and arrive at nobility may only advance the time and extent of the hero's tragic fall. We live in an ironic age, one of airbrushing and of deconstructed meanings. Who can say where appearance ends and reality begins? Much is uncertain as our technical power and control exceeds all former expectations for human lives. We are skating on thin ice. The very ground seems to move beneath us. It is one thing to live on borrowed time, but we now live on borrowed money as well. This book is being written during the declining days of the American Empire. It is about one of the last groups seeking protection as a class under our fragile constitution in our radically divided nation. It is a time that is reminiscent of the 14th century, when war and church schisms were in the air. It is also a time in my own life when disillusion and discontent have caused me to question many of my past aspirations and conclusions. What you have before you in this book is a self-portrait in oils that are as likely to run together as to afford a final perspective at last. So it goes on from there, and what I was trying to get across is that the very writing of the book taught me the limitations of an author trying to understand ourselves. It's harder to write about yourself honestly than it is to write anything fictional, because I have also written fiction, and I have no problem with it. I can step into another person's character, and I have absolutely zero problem. Just literally, the words just come. But I found when I was writing this book, it was so hard for me to re-experience events and to be honest about them, and to be honest that I was still confused, that I hadn't reached final conclusions, that I felt the desire for conclusions, and I felt the desire for clarity, but I realized how hard that is to come by, and at first that disappointed me. I thought, oh my God, if I don't know what I'm talking about, how can I write a valid book? And then I realized that the problem that I had with most transgender literature that had been published so far was that it was all too certain. Some of it was a fairy tale romance that if you could just change your sex, all of a sudden everything would come into focus in your life, and it would all be one glorious fairy tale after that. And I said, that certainly doesn't meet my experience. And I thought, and on the other hand, the other option was to say, well, you're just born to suffer. We can't help you. We don't know why you have these feelings, but don't come for us for a solution, because that's not what we do. And that was the early experience of transgender people. They felt the same dysphoria people feel now, but there were no readily available channels to go to get some help. And worse than that, not only did we not get help, but we actually got violence. We got all kinds of terrible responses to our experience, and that was very disillusioning for many of us, and it left wounds that persist to this day in the generation of transgender folk that I belong to.
I would say that though things certainly have gotten much better, Sheila. I would think that even from though this may be a bit historical and autobiographical, that the observations still have tremendous pertinence to the experience today.
It's time for the KBOO Spring Pledge Drive. Did you know KBOO is 52 years old and one of the oldest community radio stations in the country and one of the oldest media institutions in Portland? KBOO programming focuses on local communities, artists, activists, people. We're independent, community-supported, volunteer-powered radio. KBOO has trained thousands of people how to make radio, all for free thanks to the support we receive from our members. 80% of our funding comes from our members. You can donate today by clicking Donate in the mobile app, texting KBOO to 44-321, or you can mail to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. The best way is to go to kboo.fm/give. Less than 10% of listeners are members of KBOO. So won't you consider donating today at kboo.fm/give? Thank you.
Thank you, Jean. And that actually kind of sets up my next little section. So what I'm doing is, these are very short essays, and each one is meant to be pithy and ideally read in a quiet room where the reader can sit back, read it paragraph by paragraph, and think about it, and then reread it. So this is a little bit of an artificial medium to be able to express this on radio, but I still hope that you will enjoy this. So this next essay is called, "So Just Why Is It That You Are So Discontented?" And I say, "It may seem ungrateful for one who has been allowed to at least taste something of her dreams in this marvelous era of enablement, raised in America during its period of greatest global influence and affluenza, to complain. Our weekly readers told us when I was a child what to expect, and it was all marvelous. After all, we just won the war. Our future was atomic. But perhaps among the number of my discontents are those that primarily stem from myself, or at least reside there. The assignment of blame is usually a futile pursuit, though I will not enter upon that infernal quest at this time. It was customary to tell the boys of my generation, and to an extent the girls as well, that we could become whatever we wished. Oh, but not a girl. Some things are just impossible, or at least ill-advised. Life's contents, of course, are all relative. A fender bender is upsetting until you hear about someone who has died in a head-on collision. Most people who are not transsexual take this tone when dealing with those of us who are. The temptation to tell us that we should simply let go of our delusional wish or conviction that our identity does not match our bodies, and it can be overwhelming. Transsexuals are made to feel shame because our gender pain just doesn't seem real to other people. Just be glad that you're a man, they say, and don't have to menstruate. You have all the privileges anyway. Be glad that you were dealt a winning hand in the poker game of life. Of course, this comparison game can be played with anything as long as the pain isn't yours. This book will explain some of the discontents that are peculiar and particular to transsexuals, at least those that stem from my own experience. There is no one life, though, that can set a paradigm for an entire class of people. Some of us have it worse than others. The question is not how much worse it can be, but whether human pain can be lessened without imposing overwhelming costs elsewhere in the community. The human race is improved when anyone advances and can find a better mode of living. From this perspective, it is a human tragedy when, and I give a list here, more transsexuals make wages below $15,000 per year than almost any other group that might be chosen. Next point. When each year we lose people who are murdered specifically because of their transgender status, then when transgender children are forced to act out gender roles that are not in congruence with their inner sense of self, when transsexuals are shamelessly and unapologetically used for cheap laughs in various forms of media exploitation, when transgender people are denied proper health care because their condition is deemed to be cosmetic and not indicated by medical necessity, when transgender experience is simply denied rather than given credence, consideration, and respect, when transgender people are denied the full and equal use of public facilities, when transsexuals are systematically condemned by the misapplication of various forms of moral opprobrium to their condition, when transsexuals are reduced to our commercial function in sex work or to enhance various career-building activities for professional persons who claim to possess an expertise about us but are not qualified by being transsexual themselves. These issues and many more, as this book will explore and explain, are the reasons why transsexuals may work to improve our position in life rather than being content to be simply marginalized and walled in or walled out by the indifference and contempt that are often shown toward us.
There's some safety and invisibility.
Uh-huh.
But that was quite the comprehensive litany of circumstances. And I would say, yes, certainly though things have evolved somewhat since the 1980s.
I was on Howie Hawkins' radio show today.
Yeah.
And I was talking about trans issues to Howie Hawkins. He's the Green Party candidate for president last year. And we were talking about the $15 an hour minimum wage and how, like, if they just raised the wage to $15 an hour, that would be like the best thing for transgender people of almost anything I could think of, except for passing the Equality Act. Because if you raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour, like, it would immediately raise the wages of most transgender people who work at near minimum wage.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. You know, employment, if and when we can get it, decent employment would solve so many of our other issues.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's true for so many other people. We have that intersectionality of class. Absolutely.
That was a great story, Sheila.
Yeah, so
well,
Sheila,
thank you.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. kind of set out the socio-political as well as kind of the psychological existential framework. So where do you go with that in the book? I mean, how did you structure it? It's not purely academic, nor is it purely autobiographical. Is that true?
Exactly. His funny thing is that I actually wrote the book twice. At the beginning, the first part had two subparts, and then there was a second part. And it just didn't balance itself outright. And then I found myself rethinking certain issues. So the present thing is actually a second edition, the second book. And it has three parts. The first one are what I call topical essays, which are kind of the questions you've always wanted to ask about transsexual or transgender folk, and then what my answers to them were. And the second part was more strictly autobiographical, but it wasn't like a continuous narrative. The way I did it was that I did it, again, in little short snippets, each little segment of a life having its own specific message. And then in the third part of the book, I dealt with, I went back to a strictly essay format, and I dealt with issues that are being raised by the transgender issues as they're hitting us right now. So it's more contemporaneous and less of a retrospective. And the other thing is that it also deals with the problem of aging as a transgender person, which is somewhat neglected in our literature.
It's so neglected. We need to do a whole show on that, on transgender issues and aging.
I feel like I'm doing one every time I do a show, but never mind.
So this leads into, I'll give you the flavor of some of the later ones. Jean and I went to some of these the other day, and I picked out a few that are almost like prose poems. They're very short. So this one is called Poet's Journeys. My readers may or may not recall this reference to the grim poem by Robert Browning in the title, Child Roland to the Dark Tower Came. But be that as it may, this is how I feel at times lately, just like a postmodern version of Child Roland. By the way, a child, this will add lib here, a child was a knight. It does not mean a child like a children child. It was a way of referring to a knight. In my younger days, I was engaged in doing battle for gender fluidity and acceptance. I despise those who called into question the issue of gender passage from male to female, who claimed that by transitioning we were traitors to the cause. But I am growing weary of causes and crusades. I am weary alike of irate evangelicals, stodgy Catholic prelates, self-serving politicians with an anti-gay axe to grind, and of bright young things using the temporary intersection of the sexes at adolescence to transition and assume that they will be young forever. No one likes a bitter transsexual, but I understand that even this term is growing old and tattered with overuse. The trans people of today demand nothing less than full manhood or womanhood, even as these categories themselves are being called into question by cisgender people. As definitions slide into one another, words lose their meaning and discreteness. It takes an enumeration of passing qualifiers to say what anything is, and even that present consensus may soon transform and be unrecognizable tomorrow. The will is becoming more sovereign each day, and the realm of the given proportionately diminished. It is the purpose of this late essay, then, to inquire whether the quest, begun so long ago with Loomings, the first chapter of this book, is not ending as Child Rowlands did, with a darkening plain and a squat tower reared up against the shadows of the coming night falling all too swiftly all around us. The knight no sooner announces his arrival there than he realizes that all that remains to him to say is to say that he has come to that which he imagined at last, only to find no gathering crowds to witness the placing of his pennant upon the dark tower. The bestowal of tolerance for transsexuals is increasingly not real acceptance, but only the grim realization of the gender pilgrim that no one really cares about anything in our world of isolated perceptions. When everything is subjective, all meaning perishes. Definitions require opposition, and progress requires sacrifice. This has always been the way of the world. I'd like to read those last sentences over because I think there's so much in that. The bestowal of tolerance for transsexuals is increasingly not real acceptance, but only the grim realization of the gender pilgrim that no one really cares about anything in our world of isolated perceptions. When everything is subjective, all meaning perishes. Definitions require opposition, and progress requires sacrifice. This has always been the way of the world.
That was great. Thank you.
It's something that... Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, so what I got from that, at least certainly the closing, is that when we do get there, I'm using air quotes here, there, wherever our there is, there we are. it's kind
but
of
like Sheila said, I mean, the yard post is always moving. As soon as we get there, then we got to go further.
Well, yeah, there's that too. Oh. A good one.
I'll go ahead, Jean.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
I wanted to push that insight a little further still, and I've got, my next essay is called "Doing the Time Warp." I'm sure that'll bring a few memories to light. and what I wanted to portray there is, what if being transgender in a world of artificial intelligence and holograms is only the beginning, so that already I feel like a transgender dinosaur, but what if the future we become so dependent upon engineered images that we are no longer even flesh and blood. Flesh and blood itself becomes passé. So therefore, I said, but what about the future? If we're already having trouble with gender categories, what about this new world that we're moving into? And so it begins this way. As the terminology of cross-gender identification has changed and moved from being a medical category of human experience to one that is far more political, the experts have stepped aside and deferred to self-identification for us, which has to some extent taken the place of the old models. Just as the internet has opened new realms of choice and self-direction, the new gender politics is opening new options for the treatment of gender issues. Genital reassignment is no longer the gold standard for recognition in the new gender role. Indeed, the human body is assuming a new plasticity in which definitions and mandates are seen as increasingly irrelevant, except as just another option. Less can be presumed each day about us, and the letters behind LGBT increase with every year. As networks expand and our presence in the cyberspace increases, our existence is becoming more a body of data about us as opposed to one of flesh and blood existence. The human mind may someday become a mere puppet master to manipulate various idealized images of our projected selves as embodied in various holograms. If that is to be the future, then the old days of unmediated flesh may seem to be unimaginably primitive, and sex change surgery will be as antiquated then as cave paintings are now. As our animal nature is extended through various tools and the information media provides data and new modes of relating and of gathering information, our individuality is being extended. Identities may give way to various gaming postures and strategies, and our devices will become like new sensory modes, all feeding into a new central processing unit called the self, which could be the acronym for Selected, Elevated, Liberated Frontier. Experience. Perhaps the current fascination with zombies in our culture is our collective intuition that the body is becoming a phantasm when set against the far more real world of permanently encoded data in computers with their promise of immortality and endless growth. Perhaps the experience of the whole human race will someday be reduced to an algorithm and be beamed out into deep space from the last remnants of a dying planet. If anyone is receiving this, data stream to follow. I say all of this because certain signs are everywhere that what is fanciful is becoming just one more menu choice in a world of apps. The motto of the day seems to be this: as to what is optional, nothing is written with finality. Whole libraries now can be contained on a gigabyte of devices. Books are mere streams of data that can fit in a purse or a pocket and are as perishable as a command from a delete key. We are more disposable than our devices. Only a succession of pulses keeps the body alive with its coughing, its sneezes, its tears, and its laughter.
Wow, we're approaching the singularity, Sheila. Maybe you're the singularity, Sheila. Maybe we didn't realize it. It's you.
Oh my God, I can't believe it. A singularity. And, you know, that's the problem. I've been singular for so long, I could use a marriage.
You're listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. Tonight we're having a delightful conversation with transgender author Sheila Mengert about her book Transsexualism and Its Discontents, which is a series of essays that Sheila's written about all things transgender. And even though the book's a few years old, it's still great. It's actually aging so well, and it's such a pleasure getting to have this extended time with Sheila to share her stories.
Yeah, Sheila, that last piece, that last piece has such a great tension in it, because there's the lament. There's such a lament of the actual lived experience, the physiological lived experience of you know, presentation and all of that. Yeah, interesting. I really like the way you have these dilemmas, the contrasts that you weave into your pieces.
Well, thank you so much. I will get right away to the next book. The next essay is called A Handful of Sand, and it's very near. The whole book is over 370 pages. So we're getting near the end of the book now, and I've been kind of skipping through it at significant points. This one is kind of has a nostalgic, and again, it's, think of it as kind of prose poetry. So it's called A Handful of Sand. In law, it is called having a vested interest, one that is not contingent upon the happening of some contingent precedent. We all assume that we have a part in time, that our lives have vested, and we would consider it an injustice for someone to say to us that what we really possess is more like a leasehold interest rather than a fee simple absolute. Behind us, unobserved, the tides of reproduction have created a current of new experience that with each year flows higher about our feet. One day we will look up and realize that the waters that have been rising for some time, and that what we presume to be as our own eternal youth, was a delusion after all, that we stand exposed upon a sandy promontory, one that has been cut off from the mainland. It is then that we will realize that we are being pushed backwards towards those waters of the past that have consumed countless generations before us. The face that we see each day in the mirror would once have been a stranger's face to us, just as we do not recognize ourselves now in the callow and untried visage of our old yearbook photographs. As our mind grows in subtlety and resource with age, our bodies begin to fail us. Some of those whom we once knew have already borne their unique witness to existence and passed on. Far from being examples of some premature tragedy, their deaths meet the actuarial expectations on a chart in some dusty life insurance office. The parade of hopeful, youthful countenances is in fact as unending as the tidal flow on the beach that I am recalling as I write these words. I can see the promontory in my mind and hear the windy beating of the late afternoon surf. The sun is falling swiftly, and I can feel that strange pull that evening light always seems to impose upon me when I am there. In the past, I would feel... was that?
Oh my God, that was so beautiful, Sheila. I think I interrupted you.
Well, that's all right. We are both aficionados of the coast. I thought you'd enjoy this part.
That was just so beautiful, Sheila. That's like, I love your writing, and I've read that one before, but it's so nice to hear you read it because you really capture something about the immateriality of existence. I mean, there's a way in which you really can't. There's a way in which you really can't define human existence. You can't really bottle it or put it in a category that's separate or outside of the actual lived experience of people. And your writing there just captures that truth so well. Thank you.
Well, you're so welcome. Well, here's where it goes from there. It goes, in the past, I would feel within me one akin to that lemon-colored sun resting on the horizon, and feel a confidence in all the dawns that still awaited me. I would count over the inventory of my future years and skip away to a beach fire along the shore, a beacon brave against the winds of night. Today, I'm not so sure. A fashionable poetic angst has yielded to a sense of the fragmentary and the incomplete. Yet, I am one of the lucky ones. I was born in a country with at least a veneer of culture and civilization, and to a generation that sparkled with under technicolor dreams. I have had the leisure to record both events and my reflections upon them. Still, there is a deep sadness within me, so it is that I bend forward in my mind and reach out my hand. Here before me, in this record of my past, like sand without an hourglass to contain it. Even the land where I stand now may retreat again beneath the sea from whence it arose. Suddenly, my life, that once seemed so infinite, is dwarfed into the size of one of those minuscule grains of sand now falling from my fingers until my hand is empty. This flesh of mine is naked to the night and the wind and salt spray that comes on with the swift summer darkness. Words that once seemed so immortal become finally like the brave assault of waves upon these headland cliffs. Ideas and controversies seem suspended, as they always are, over the vast unanswered questions of eternity and whether I shall play a part within them. It is at times like these that I long for a home that I have never found and a personal cohesion that was always just beyond my reach. As the sun nears the horizon, I think of how this scene has always been my symbol for human existence and recall that I have always been fighting against this very tide of age. My voice is not so different, after all, from all who have preceded me and from all those who will follow. But the virtues of impersonality may be overrated. It is something, after all, to be just one more frail pulse along the coast this night. I take my life and cradle it to my breast and thank God to have been alive and for the privilege to take my chances on being reconstituted in some form after death that will still preserve some memory of me when the final and most real dawn breaks upon the earth. Yeah. Until then, I am working at being able to surrender my place gracefully at this movable feast of a world, as Hemingway said of Paris. My long acquaintance with the words of the poets will ease the final passage, and my own words left behind will bear some witness that when I joined the tiny creatures at my feet, that there were really more to me after all than just a mere handful of sand.
Yay, bravo. Oh my goodness. That was so beautiful. Thank you. Tonight with Sheila Mangert. Sheila is the author of Transsexualism and Its Discontents. And she's just sharing some essays from her book about, kind of her life experience as a transgender woman. Sheila, thank you so much. That was beautiful. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Sheila, that was incredible. I love hearing you read. That's so great. We need to do more of these.
Oh, I'm so glad that you enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Okay, so Sheila, before we forget, and we'll give you a chance again before we close the show, tell our listeners where they can find your book.
Okay, this specific book that I've been reading from tonight, again, is called Transsexualism and Its Discontents, A Transgender Political Profile. It can be obtained at kitsappublishing.com, kitsappublishing.com. And I also have a book of short stories coming out from a different publisher, and it's a book that is part of the Trinity Collection, which is an anthology of 12 other authors and I am one of them, but they also are doing a solo volume of this particular book. The short stories are not all specifically transgender related, but at the same time, they have a basic transsexual theme and sensibility that I think the readers might enjoy. And that's going to be from Blue Forge Press in Port Orchard, Washington. And the title of that book is Auguries of Desolation, A Year of Stories by Sheila Mengert. Auguries of Desolation, A Year of Stories by Sheila Mengert at Blue Forge Press.
Okay, great.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and we'll do that again before we close. So we've got about 10 minutes here before we're going to have to go. How would you like to bring some closure? Because you're getting close to the end of the pieces, you know, chronologically in your book. How would you like to close?
I think the best way to close this discussion tonight would be to say that what I have learned as a transgender person is that try to be gentle with yourself if you're transgender. Try to be aware that you're stepping onto a moving skateboard. Our whole country, our whole world is dealing with the transgender issue in a way that that has, in some ways, it's been a benefit. People are at least attuned to our existence. They have representatives out there that are very high profile. There are television shows. But on the other hand, that is a great burden for an individual transgender person to bear, because none of our lives is going to be an exact mirror of what people are seeing on television. And it's obvious that the very flexibility that we're seeing in psychology and the various modalities of treatment for our distress, that itself is in transition right now. Some people are acting in one direction and meeting a great deal of opposition in professional circles and in personal circles. And unfortunately, we, fragile as many of us are caught in between these grinding mill wheels of social change and asked to bear the burden on our own shoulders when it's hard enough to just adapt to having an individual human personality. So one of the reasons I wrote my book is to describe that very sense of sometimes powerlessness, sometimes fear, sometimes confusion, and my own personal, without giving direct advice to anybody of how to live their specific life, is to say, try to keep a plan B available, try to keep an escape route available so that if you find yourself in a position where it's just not possible to move forward with your transition, or if it's being delayed, or if it's going to have some horrible cost on the rest of your life, realize that you are more than just being transgender. You also have all the other factors of your life. And sometimes gender becomes such an all-pervasive category, so politicized also, that everything becomes reductionist, and that all we are, we're seen as only transgender people, and therefore we never get out of that particular life dilemma to just resume life and enjoy the little things that make every day possible, and to rejoin the communities that would otherwise exclude us, whether that's family or faith or religion or community or jobs, any of this. I really want to end our status as exiles. I don't think that's good to do to anybody. I think everybody would agree that when you make people feel bullied, lonely, and rejected, that's not what we should be aiming for as a society. We should try to take everybody and say, there's room for you too. We need you. You're important. You're precious. So tell that to yourself if you're starting to have doubts about yourself, and try to seek out healthy and life-affirming choices wherever you can find them. And it takes a lot of creativity to do so. The older generation can tell you that it wasn't easy for us either. And I won't go into the question of who's finding it harder, because every generation has its own challenges. We also had some benefits. We grew up in a much more stable world. And yes. Once the doors are open and you're out in open ground and can move in any direction, it's sort of like being the queen on the chessboard. You can move in every direction, but also everybody is out to grab the queen and checkmate the king. There's a lot to be said for being a humble and quiet little person living a humble and quiet little life.
Yeah, there was a time when it's paradoxical. There's a time when we were, you know, so closeted and such so subcultural, but there was a fair amount of safety in that anonymity. That seems to be gone now, you're right. Every generation has its challenges. And things do evolve. We do now seem to be faced with far more. We are in the spotlight far more than I think, you know, any of us really would ever have wanted. But it's also a tremendous time of opportunity.
It is. And it's a funny thing. It's like, I think some people, actually Truman Capote said it, and he was quoting St. Teresa of Avila, and he spoke about the danger of answered prayers, that getting what you want is sometimes the most difficult thing of all. And his own life kind of proved that. He found great success as a writer in his last days and everything. But there were some things that he never really did find. And I think that most writers feel like that. Writers are always trying to find an audience for what they have to say, and also wrestling with the human condition, and that's why they write. Writers are kind of a breed that take the ordinary interior monologues that everybody has and slaps them down on paper. And that's certainly the case with my book. It was an effort to confront myself in my own words. And so now when I read my own stuff, sometimes I'm just like, oh my God, I wrote that. Or I'll be like, I'll be looking at it and I'll say, I can't believe that how true that really is about what I really did experience, but until I wrote it down, I didn't realize it was true. I actually had to formalize it to be actually convinced my own self how real this really was for me.
Is there a final, like, conclusionary piece to this book? Is it something that's short enough that we can... Or perhaps you can pick pertinent points from it?
I think a better way to do it is to write from what I call a brief afterword, which is at the end of the book when it's already completed. Because once you get in the habit of writing a book, it's really hard to let it go. So
okay.
I wrote an afterword called Legacies, and I'll read you just the first paragraph of that, and that should close us out. To write an autobiography without the precondition of possessing an antecedent fame may savor of an inordinate sense of one's own personal worth. Why would anyone care what my particular profile is, political or otherwise? Or is it as an archetype that I would have my readers view my own experiences and reflections? But what authority have I that my experience should be seen as normative for other transsexuals, particularly when I have proceeded to qualify its witness with as many conditionals and cautions as I have done in my book? But then every autobiography is by its very nature unique, because only one author is entitled to write it. He or she who is privileged to live out the full span of the allotted human lifespan, will at some point begin to notice that the tide has imperceptibly turned. The species has extracted all that it may from the individual, and his continued existence only serves to perpetuate past follies. The old may be free from the swift presumptions of youth, but they are burdened by far too many memories to easily entertain new possibilities. The neural pathways are simply too worn by repeated journeys down the same paths to reach the same conclusions. Gradually, the dead begin to outnumber the living in one's bank of personal acquaintances. The seamless faces of the young become a reproach to one that bears witness to every emotion that one has ever entertained. Forgetfulness and oversight become a source of daily frustration. Last efforts to assemble a fortunate and felicitous life are met with the shrinking reservoir of time and the vastness of the desert to be irrigated.
Just as I think when we started the show, you were describing these pieces as something that you hoped someone would read and then just sit and take deep breaths and contemplate. And that's exactly the effect that that has on me. Sheila, I see by the clock on the wall that we really do need to bring closure here. One more time, I want to remind people that you have been listening to a conversation with Sheila Mankert. She's an author. This is Transpositive PDX on KBOO in Portland, Oregon. Sheila, give us one last time the titles and publishing places that folks can find your writings.
I have two different publishers. The book you've been hearing tonight is Transsexualism and Its Discontents, A Transgender Political Profile by Sheila Mengert, published by Kitsap, KITSAP, and it's called kitsappublishing.com, kitsappublishing.com in Washington State. And the other book that I have written recently on a transgender theme is my solo volume of short stories, Auguries of Desolation, A Year of Stories by Sheila Mengert. Auguries of Desolation, A Year of Stories by Sheila Mengert, published by Blue Forge Press in Port Orchard, Washington. Thank you very much.
Okay, Sheila. So great to have had you on with us this evening, and I look forward to doing this with you again in the not too distant future. Thank you for sharing these pieces. It's all great, great work. And with that, I wish everyone a pleasant good evening from Transpositive PDX, KBOO.
Thank you, Jane.
Good night.
Night, night.
It's time for the KBOO Spring Pledge Drive. Did you know KBOO is 52 years old and one of the oldest community radio stations in the country and one of the oldest media institutions in Portland? KBOO programming focuses on local communities, artists, activists, people. We're independent, community-supported, volunteer-powered radio. KBOO has trained thousands of people how to make radio, all for free thanks to the support we receive from our members. 80% of our funding comes from our members. You can donate today by clicking Donate in the mobile app, texting KBOO to 44-321, or you can mail to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. The best way is to go to kboo.fm/give. Less than 10% of listeners are members of KBOO. So won't you consider donating today at kboo.fm/give? Thank you. One, two, three, one, two, three, drink. One, two, three, one, two, three, drink.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, board meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our